Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Happy Friday again, everybody. I know it's probably not Friday for you, but it is Friday for me and John Kassman, who's with us on the show today. So it's going to be a good one. John is a multifamily man, and he hosts the Multifamily Insights podcasts, formerly Target Market Insights. So I'm sure it's going to be a good one. We love talking multifamily. It's one of our favorite assets. I haven't done it, but man, I really should get into it because multifamily is where it's at. So John, I'm super excited to talk. How you doing?
Gabe, I'm excellent. Thank you for having me on. And you know, you got to be one of the few people who invest in commercial real estate, but don't have any multifamily experience, right? You got all these other assets you're investing in. Most of us start in multifamily because it's a nice progression from residential. But here you are investing in other asset classes. So together, we got a whole portfolio of commercial real estate.
There you go. Yeah. And I, when I first got started, I did small duplexes, triplexes, that kind of stuff. And I was going to do multifamily, but I was going to all these like meetups and everybody was doing multifamily. And so I was thinking like, man, that is just, it's gotta be saturated, but there's so many multifamily apartment complexes out there that it's just the numbers make sense just to go after them anyways. So, and you're a testament to that. It still works. You can still get out there and get some deals done. So I told you before we get on here, we like to start with stories. So take us to the beginning of when you got into real estate and just tell us, how'd you get in?
All right. Close your eyes and imagine 2007, 2008, right? The economy is starting to go in the wrong direction. And I am in Detroit, Michigan, working at one of the top automotive companies in the world, watching what appears to be my career and my company get ready to go down the toilet, right? So I'm working at GM and I'm watching my CEO on the news getting completely lambasted for taking a private plane to DC when we were asking for government support to help our company. And at that time, we just thought it was our company, right? We just thought it was GM. And I'm updating my resume. I'm ready to get, you know, canned any day now. And I'm realizing that
this moment in history for you, being able to see that on the front lines.
You know, you don't know you're in the middle of history. I mean, you know, to an extent, right? But when you're in it, you're not thinking about, oh, this is a historic moment that I'll remember for the rest of my life. You're like, I better figure out a plan to get off this sinking ship, right? So in that moment, the one good thing that happened was it really was drawn out. You know, I mean, it started really in April or May of 2008. And then it went into the election season, right? So that was a big thing. We had the CARS Act that came in. We had the structure bankruptcy. But the real important thing was there was a day where they were making a massive round of layoffs. And people in our company were going to be impacted. And I remember the guy who sat kind of, you know, diagonal from me. He got let go and he left a voicemail to the entire floor that was just piercing. And he talked about how he had been with the firm for over 20 years and he was diabetic and he had no idea what he was going to do, how he was going to get his medicine. And I remember two things came through my mind at the time. One was I felt a great sense of empathy for him and what he was going through. The second was, you know, this dream that we're sold in corporate America of being a lifer and getting a good job and working until you get your gold watch and your pension, that just wasn't going to fly. I needed a plan B, and real estate became that plan B for me. So at that time is when I set out to become a real estate investor. It took time for me to get traction. I moved to Chicago in 2011. The next year, I bought my first property, which was a duplex in 2012. Saved up my money. My wife and I, we bought a 3-unit building shortly thereafter. Saved up more money, refinanced that first property, bought an 8-unit building. So now I'm in a commercial multifamily property. And from there, I really was looking for ways to scale and to grow. Fast forward today, we've invested in over $125 million worth of apartments. And we work with everyday professionals who want to get the benefits of real estate investing without the headaches of being a landlord themselves.
Nice, man. I love it. That's the perfect trajectory right there. Getting into small multi, graduating to well, getting into single family, then graduating into small multi, then graduating into, you know, true syndication style multifamily. So, love to hear it. When you, you know, after that catastrophe with GM, how long after that crash, the 2008 crash, did you start to actually buy property? Did you get it right at the base, or did you wait until like 2012, 13, 14, 15 to get in?
Well, two things happened, right? Just going back to the historical comment we were talking about, like, you never know when you're at the bottom, right? Yeah. You only know until it starts going up and you're like, hey, you know what? Things seem to be much better. So what happened was I was looking to move. It took a while for the job market to open up, right? Because nobody's hiring in the middle of this recession. So it took a while for that to happen. And in 2011, when I moved to Chicago, that was really the first thing. But the context is I had to make a decision. Did I want to invest in Detroit, or did I want to wait to be in a place where I felt I could see myself long term? Detroit at that time, you want to talk about rock bottom, bargain basement type pricing.
I mean, they were
giving away property, right? I mean, they were doing downtown high rises. You could sign, you know, a lease for like 99 years, like a buck or something like that. But you had to do all the renovations, place up. And Dan Gilbert came in and kind of revitalized, not just Dan, but he was a part of that group that helped revitalize downtown Detroit. Nonetheless, everyone I knew at that time who owned real estate in Detroit, they were trying to sell it. So when I got excited and I would talk to people about real estate investing, they're like, oh, you want to invest? Hey, man, I got a house you could buy right now. I'm like, wait a minute, maybe this plan has some flaws. So I ended up waiting until I moved to Chicago. So it ended up being about maybe 3 years from the time when I committed to investing in real estate until I actually purchased the first real estate property. I think the important thing for your listeners is, one, it's okay that it takes time. You know, what you're doing in the middle of that process is what's really important. So for me, it was reading books, listening to podcasts once that became a thing, attending meetups, reading articles, and just really educating myself. You talked about, you know, that trajectory, you know, single families to duplexes to small multi to commercial. One of the things that I read in almost every single book, anybody who invested in multifamily, they all said they wish they would have started sooner, right? Yeah. They wish they would have skipped single family.
I asked that question sooner, right? On this podcast. And I ask if you could give your younger self you know, a piece of advice, what would you say? And most people say, you know, I wish I would have got started sooner. It's like 95% of the people say that. Jumped into your thought there, so keep going.
But I was adamant based on that. I'm like, I'm not going to buy single family. So that first one I bought was a duplex. I needed a place to live, and a duplex was a great option. So I house hacked it, right? I lived in one unit, I rented out the other. And in a market like Chicago, it's ideal because I was already living like a renter. So all I had to do was live like a renter, but own the building. And that was my whole approach. So that made it a nice, easy transition, where I think it could be harder for someone who has a house and they have a home to kind of walk or move out of that home to become a renter. I think that's a harder transition for people. So for me, it was actually a really nice time in my life because I had rented all the way up to that point, even going back to college. So it was a nice transition for us to get started.
Yeah, absolutely. Doing the, sounds like you guys were doing that burn method. That is, I wish I would have got started doing that, you know, living in one side, getting refinancing, keeping the property. I started just selling the properties, but if I had kept them, and everybody says this, they wish they had kept more and sold less. But that's so true. I wish I would have kept those first properties that I did, just refinanced, took out the equity versus selling them on the market. Cause believe me, they were much more valuable now in today's market in Seattle. So once you did start to go the commercial route, you started to get into commercial, you know, grade properties, 4+ units. What were you looking for? And then how were you actually structuring the deal? Were you bringing all the capital yourself, or did you actually start raising capital on those first commercial properties?
So there are a couple things that was really important. That first commercial property, I brought all the capital myself. So my wife and I, we actually took some of the funds from that first property. We got a line of credit. Use those funds to acquire this 8-unit property. But we did realize that this was an unsustainable approach because
I'm going to jump in there. You got a line of credit, like a HELOC on your property?
We got a HELOC. We got a HELOC on that first property, pulled out the $100,000 and actually took that some other funds and bought another property with it. So the thing for us was we realized it wasn't very sustainable because we could only save up so much. Yeah. You know, we were making good money, but we had two small kids at this point. We're saving every free dollar that exists, and we just couldn't scale as fast as we were hoping to scale. And I think the important thing is, as an investor, we have to make sure we understand what our goals are. If I take you back to where I started, my whole goal was to insulate myself from someone calling me into their office one day and telling me I was no longer in the company's plans and I didn't have a plan B. So when I looked at what I was building, it was nice that I was building these assets and I was building equity, but I didn't have enough cash flow to really replace my income. And what ended up happening is the job I was working for at that time, they also went into bankruptcy. Oof. And I was in this moment where and I had my second child. And I mean, just the anxiety started to build. And I had to start really thinking about what I was doing
with your corporate jobs. You're like,
it was tough. It was tough. But, you know, I had to step back and say, well, what I'm doing is it's working, but my strategy is slightly off. Mm. And that's when I warmed up to the idea of work with other investors. Because the only issue was I could only buy properties when I had enough money saved in my account to go buy them. Right. Mm-hmm. But I was coming across deals. I was meeting people who wanted to invest in real estate and I would talk to them. I would try to coach them on it. Hey, check this out. Read this book. Do this. Right. And they would look at me and say, yeah, I'm not doing all of that. And that's when it kind of went off to say, OK, maybe there's something here where I can help them. They can help me. We can create a win-win situation. And from that thought, Chasm Capital Group was born. I ended up hiring a mentor, started meeting more people, traveling, networking. And ultimately, that took us to a place where we were doing large scale apartment investments.
Very cool. So the moment of kind of the catalyst, the moment where things started to gain momentum for you, was that when you hired that mentor? What was the moment that you realized, okay, I can scale this? Like, I don't have to wait until I save $200,000 in my bank account to buy my next property.
You know, it's interesting, right? I don't think there was like one moment. I think it was a bunch of small moments leading up, probably like five. I would say the first one was, you know, even going back to when I first moved to Chicago, I remember going to these meetups and they were like RIA events out there. Mm-hmm. And I met this guy and he was just telling me what he had, you know, had a portfolio of like 300 units. To me, that was crazy. Like, I had never in my life seen somebody with a portfolio like that. So I remember talking to him and he kind of did a little, not smug, but he was kind of like almost a Jedi in the way he talked, right? He would give you a clue and you would sit there scratching your head trying to figure out what the heck he meant. But I remember him, he was the first person who introduced me to this concept of raising capital, work with other investors, but he didn't say it like that. He just said, well, how are you financing your deals? I'm like, oh, I'm saving the cash. And he just laughed and walked away. And I'm like, oh, is there another way that people are financing these deals? Like, what? So that was the first one. And then a really good friend of mine, she ran a meetup in Chicago. And she, when I met her, she had three units. She had one property, three units. Maybe 6 months later, she had nine units. So she had tripled her portfolio. And then about a year after that, she had went from nine units to 90 units. Oh, wow. And I remember saying, whoa, what? How did you do that? So I asked her for lunch. I took her to lunch. I fully expect her to tell me her rich uncle or father, grandfather, somebody gave her this big inheritance, right? But that's not what she said. She told me that she had come across some investors in California and they were looking to invest in the Midwest. They came across her, liked her, and wanted to partner. And after, you know, courting each other for a while, they decided to partner. And that was the first time that I had met someone who was raising capital and working with them. And she kind of talked to me about it and like what her experience was. And yeah, you could absolutely do it. And that was the first time that I really felt I could do it. And then once I hired that mentor and learned how he had done it, that took it from a concept and idea to here are the tangible steps that it will take in order for you to replicate that. So those points are really clear. And I think it's important for everyone to understand. First, you have to understand that this is possible, period, right? That people are doing that, which if you're listening to this, you know that people are raising money and they can do deals. Then you have to believe that you can do it. And I think that's where people get tripped up, right? You've got to believe that you actually have the ability to do it. And then last is actually the information or the steps necessary to do it successfully.
Yeah. And for me personally, I don't know about you, but I didn't really think that I could do it until I did it. So like for me, I just, I 100% agree. I think you have to believe, or you do have to believe that you can do it in order for you to make quick progress and make efficient progress. But just to get your first deal done, you don't really have to believe, you know, you don't have to have a strong conviction that it can be done, because I didn't. And I knew that it could be done. I really didn't believe that I could do it, because I just, for some reason, there was something out there that was like, nah, it's just not going to work. It's for somebody else. But I just didn't listen to that voice. And I said, fuck you. And I just kept going forward until I got a deal done. And once I had that concrete proof that, yes, I did it, it can be done, that's when, you know, there's like a door that opens in your mind. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, we can do this. We can get deals done. And I felt like my motion went much more efficiently, my actions were efficient, and I could just, you know, knew the steps that I needed to take to get, you know, to get the portfolio that I was looking for. Was it the same for you, or were you able to convince yourself that you could do it before you actually got a deal done?
Yes, but that's only because I had gone through that process you're talking about over a long time, right? So, I mean, literally from 2008 or 2009, I had started that process. Now, like you, I eliminated that thought of raising money or working with someone else, which is why I did my own. I bought that 2-unit, I bought that 3-unit, I bought that 8-unit, all with my own capital. But the whole time, I'm surrounding myself with people who are playing the game a little differently. Mm-hmm. I read books, you know, I remember reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but beyond that, the ABCs of Real Estate Investing by Ken McElroy. And in that book, Ken McElroy says your first deal doesn't have to be a single family house, doesn't have to be a duplex or 4-unit. It could be 100-plus unit. And I remember saying, this dude is crazy. Nobody's going out there buying 100 units with their first property unless you're super rich, right? Like, yeah, that's the only person who could do that. And I didn't know about syndication. I didn't know about, you know, pooling capital together to go out there and buy apartments. But I had these nuggets of information in my head. So for me, it wasn't until I could see proof from other people who I knew, right? Not some random dude from a book, not some random person from a podcast. Hopefully I'm not too random for you. But I mean, reality is, you know, it's a dude on a podcast, right? But when it was someone I met, again, my friend Bree in Chicago, when I saw her go from 3 units when I met her to 9 units to 90 units, that's when it became real, because it wasn't as obtuse or random. Like I saw that there was a clear pathway, and I started to surround myself with people who were thinking and acting like that. So I think part of it is we have to train ourselves by surrounding ourselves with the right people and the right information. But the other thing is we have to understand our own wins, you know? And I also had to look at my career and where I was in my life. And I said, you know what? This resume is actually pretty impressive. Like you forget it's you, but it's like, I was the youngest advertising manager at a company like General Motors. You know, I was a part of the team that led Buick to be one of the fastest growing brands in America. This is coming out of bankruptcy, right? This is a brand that many people thought we should close, and it was the fastest growing brand in America the next year. I was part of the team. I was, you know, recognized as one of the top advertising and marketing professionals in the country. So I had those wins. I oversaw $100 million advertising budget as 7 agency partners. I say that not to brag or anything. It's just, I had to remind myself that I've accomplished some things. Mm-hmm. I might know how to manage projects. I might know how to manage a team of individuals, right? And pull folks together so that they understand the vision and what we're trying to get accomplished. I had to really look at my corporate experience and my professional experience to pull some of those wins to say, okay, I think you actually have the ability to do this. There are people who have certainly way less experience, way less track record, who are out there killing it in real estate. And if they can figure this out, I'm pretty sure you can figure this out.
Yeah, it's definitely not rocket science. And I like how you said, by surrounding yourself with people that were doing it, you kind of by proxy got the realization and the confidence that it can be done and that you can do it. I feel like that is, I don't know, it's important to keep in mind, especially if you're just getting started out. Anybody out there, you're just getting started out, you want to do bigger deals. Just go out there, go to meetups, and surround yourself with those people who are doing the deals. Even if you're not part of the deal, you know, obviously try to get in that door, try to be part of the deal. But if you can't get it done, then at least surround yourself with those people. Have conversations with them. Take them out to lunch. When your mind sees other people doing it, it starts to realize like it can be done. I can do it. And so your world starts to open up, and you can start to take those actions that'll get you, you know, to the closing table. So what does the future look like for you guys? What is your bread and butter right now? What are you trying to purchase? And what are your goals for the next few years?
Yeah, so we have two arms of our business, right? One is the investing side, the other is the education side. On the investing side, we're always looking for deals and opportunities. We are looking for B-class deals that cash flow, that have some upside potential. So we do a value-add strategy, very common, but essentially we're looking for a deal that's making some money, but we want to come in almost like a venture capitalist. We want to come in with our fresh capital, make some improvements and drive up that net operating income or drive up the value of the property. So those are the kind of deals we're looking for. We primarily focus on the Midwest and the Southeast regions, markets like Louisville, Columbus, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, and then in the Southeast down like Atlanta, Georgia, top parts of Florida, the Carolinas. So those are kind of the markets that we're playing in. We have some offers out now. I actually just got a note late last night that we're in best and final on one of the deals we're looking at. And I will tell you, the market certainly shifted, but we're excited. I think there's definitely opportunities because there are going to be people who have to sell because they had a short-sighted approach to the market. We like to take more of a mid to long-term approach. We don't want to hold forever, but we're also not banking on selling a property in 2 years. So for us, we feel like we have a little bit more flexibility in the execution of our business plan, and we expect to be presented with plenty of opportunities in the near future.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like, and also seller expectations have kind of aligned more.
They're
more
starting to align. They're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, with the interest rates. For the past year, you know, we do self storage, and, you know, 2022, 2023, people were still wanting 4, 5, 6 caps for self storage. And, you know, even on market right now, you can find something like that. But with an interest rate that's at 7, it just doesn't make sense. It never pencils unless you're putting down 75%. Not really. But if you're putting a ton down, it might make sense. Otherwise, it's not. But luckily, yeah, I feel like the market's now starting to align itself with the current interest rate environment. All right, man. Well, I just took a peek at the clock. It looks like we have run it down. So it's time to jump us into the quick question round. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Starts with education. Could be any form. I just need two recommendations. Give me one for real estate and then one for general life wisdom.
General life wisdom, I'm going to go with... I know we say Atomic Habits, so I'm going to stick with that. Atomic Habits. There are a bunch of other books that I've been reading lately, but Atomic Habits is my go-to. For real estate, I'm going to stick with apartment syndication in particular, and I'm going to go with the best ever book on apartment syndication.
Joe Fairless, yeah. Good, yep. Good recommendations. Next question is for your younger self. So let's go back to the John who was just getting that notification back at GM that half his company was being fired. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
You've got time. Take the steps now. Do the thing that feels risky now. You'll have the ability to recover.
That's good advice. I like that. All right. Next question is about your business. The positions, first three positions we hire form the foundation of our company moving forward. So what were they for you? And would you hire them in a different order if you did it again today?
Assistant was the first one. I would definitely hire that one first because she makes my life much easier. Social media manager or marketing manager is a second. I agree. I think that's the right one. And then you need an acquisitions person for the deal flow. So I think I would do it the same way. They flow and work well. You kind of need, you know, the money to come through. You need the relationships. You need the work off your table. So I would do it the same way.
All right. You've already mentioned a few metros that you guys are excited about, Southeast, Midwest, but there's a lot of cities out there in those markets. So what specific city are you most excited about investing in today?
You're right. There are a number that I'm excited about. I would say the one I am most excited about, man, this is like picking between children. I'm going to say Columbus because I think it has the right blend of cash flow, upside appreciation, demand outside of local investors, but also my team. I really like the team we have in the Columbus market, so I'm going to pick that market.
Nice. Yeah, Columbus is a good one. I feel Columbus is exceptionally competitive, though, for a market that you know, it's not a coastal market where the prices are $600,000 per door. But for a Midwest market, I feel like Columbus is, it might be the most competitive market in the Midwest. Do you think?
I agree. It is. And the thing is that like Indianapolis is probably right up there, but Indianapolis has a whole different vibe. Like Indianapolis is really more, you know, it's almost like fraternal, you know, like the group, the players and owners in that market deal with each other. So the stuff that actually gets sent to the general public is kind of the stuff they've already, you know, looked at and passed over. Versus I think Columbus, you have a lot of, like, there's not like one broker in Columbus. Like there are a number of brokers or lots of different deals. There's certainly brokers who deal with certain types of assets, but it's very competitive. I would say it's when you look at the numbers, it's more comparable to Atlanta to me. So you're right. I think it is kind of an anomaly, but if you could find the right opportunities, I think that's what makes it very attractive, because you do have out of market investors who will look at Columbus because, again, the population growth is there, the job growth, the diversification, you've got the government backing up with it being the capital. There's a ton of things to like about the market. So I think that makes it attractive if you can come in and actually have a strong acquisition play.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually, we just did a study on a number of markets because we're in Indy. Indy is one of the markets that we're in. We bought self-storage and we're looking for more, but we wanted to add another market. And so we got the data on tons of markets that we were interested in. Columbus was on the top of our list, but we decided against it because of it's a little bit more competitive. And we just chose other markets for other reasons, but, yeah, it's interesting that you chose Columbus, because I did a lot of research into it. I like Columbus, but it's one that we ultimately decided not to go for.
It's KC, different. It's yeah.
KC was the other one, and then Gainesville, Florida.
Yep.
All right. Next question is I lost my section. It's turned into the not quick question round. All right, where are we? There we are. Biggest lesson learned: not every deal goes the way we expect it. A lot of times a wrench is thrown into the mix and we have to, you know, change or pivot directions and then learn a lesson in the meantime. So what was a deal that went a little bit sideways for you, and what was the lesson you pulled from it?
Well, I learned something from every deal we do. I would say the biggest lesson learned from a philosophical and our overall approach really came from flipping. I was not a flipper, never wanted to flip. I kind of walked you through my trajectory. When I made the decision to go larger into apartment syndication, personally, I wanted to generate more cash. So I started to flip, and I had a partner that I was flipping with, and it just went as bad as you could imagine. I was aware enough that I didn't really want to be a flipper to not put that burden on myself. So I had a partner who was a developer. They ran the day-to-day on that. I partnered with him. I was more of a silent investor, basically, even though the property was in my name. And I really learned how to protect yourself and how to do deal structures in a way that are mutually beneficial. And that structure, I really had all of the responsibility and none of the decision-making. I put up all the capital. I was pretty much, you know, on paper, I was pretty much a lone wolf hiring a third party contractor, but that contractor had equity in the upside of the deal. None of the downside if things went awry, which they did. And I was left picking up all the pieces. So to me, it was it sounds crazy, but it was a great experience because it really taught me how to understand deal structures where they're truly win-win situations, but also that, you know, we've got to vet our partners and who we do business with. And I got to do a better job in cleaning up some of those things in our processes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had a similar experience, and I feel like the lesson that I pulled from it is everybody has to have skin in the game. You know, if you are going to be partnering, then it does benefit people, both parties, to bring capital, especially if you're doing something like flips. Just because if somebody really is, if they have nothing, if they can only take upside from a deal and there's no downside for them, then there's very little incentive. Even if they have good intentions, there's still little incentive for them to put the amount of effort that is required to get that deal, get the deal done and get the right ROI on it. So yeah, that's a difficult lesson to learn, but it's a good one to learn and then take to your next deals.
And I'd rather learn that with my money than with investors. So it was great for me to learn it by myself on a solo project. So it kind of informed how we work with others moving forward.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. It's a two-parter. Where can they find you? And then what can they expect when they reach out?
Yeah, listen, you can find me in a lot of places. I think the best place is, one, check out our podcast, Multifamily Insights. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts. On top of that, you can go to our website. We have a sample deal package, kasmancapital.com/sample deal. If you want to wrap your head around multifamily and maybe what an apartment syndication deal looks like, if you want to be active or if you want to be passive, check it out. It's a free resource. We give you some nice follow-up information there. Check that out. It's free. The thing you can expect is information that will help you be a better investor. Our information is geared towards multifamily apartment investing, but I think it really is applicable across commercial real estate. And some of it is applying, you know, applicable across any kind of investment. So if you want to learn how to be a better investor, you should definitely follow me. Start with the podcast and then make sure you check out that sample deal.
Perfect. I will put that link in the show notes. So if y'all want to reach out, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down that full description. And there you can find John's link. All right, man. That wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions, reach out to me, Gabe at realestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.